Scorpions Avenue. Bunny, hello, hello, hello. How are you, my dear?
I'm good. I'm fully vaccinated, and within 2 weeks, I will be fully immunized against COVID-19.
Okay, me too. I'm fully vaccinated. I got my second one on Friday. But so when you get the second one, you're not fully immunized by that point? You still have to wait to be immune?
Yes, you have to wait for a couple of weeks for it to fully take effect. Like, I've heard 2 weeks. I've heard, 3 weeks. I've washed the skin off my hands for 1 year and worn these fucking masks, and it is getting more and more trying as the summer comes. So I don't want to fuck that up. And I want to be, before I do anything, I want to be, let the vaccine sink in. And I don't know about you, but, a lot of people online are talking about the issues they had with the vaccine. Everyone's going to be different, but... Mm-hmm. I had just a sore arm the first shot, just the way you would have with a flu vaccine. The second vaccine, 3 weeks later, I got the Moderna one. I felt a little lackluster. So it was like I was on stage. No, I felt a little bit achy, slight headache, although that could be related to a sinus infection. I did not feel bad at all after the second one, and I was gearing up for a doozy because a few months ago I had a vaccine 1 and 2 for shingles, which is something that we over 50s get. And honey, that second one knocked me out. I was bedridden for...
I want to knock you out right now.
Well, you do have shingles. That one was tough. And the Moderna vaccine for me was nowhere near as rough as the shingles vaccine.
Yeah, I had a sore arm the first day, and the next day I had like a headache and like a little, like a slight body fatigue, but nothing too crazy. But I mean, I didn't know about the whole immune thing. I literally got my shot and went straight to the glory hole. So I may have fucked up my chances with everything.
You mean you didn't get your shot? You got a different kind of shot at the glory hole.
Right. Yeah, I got that one on in my butt.
You got several of those. Well, that's an option for people who want your hole, but would be turned off by your face. So I'm not going to frown on it. The only wood you give men is fucking splinters from a glory hole. So if that's what it got to be, that's what it got to be.
I have a question, Bunny. Would you ever, if you fancy yourself maybe like a couple years younger, or even now, would you get into like an OnlyFans situation?
Oh, no, never. No, I would
no?
never. Well, I don't think many people would sign up for that.
You don't know that. Girl, there's a market for everything.
Okay, there is, but I'm not marketing my body or any sort of porn thing going on, so... Yes, there may be a few sad souls, who would sign up for my, OnlyFans page, but that doesn't mean that I want to do that. So yes, I could also do cameos, but I have not seen fit to do that either. So, we choose how we present ourselves.
This is true. This is true. But I mean, people are out here. There's a doc about OnlyFans on Hulu and how lucrative the industry is. And it's just so crazy how like the porn industry has like flipped around and be like, we don't need the studios. We don't need all this. I'm going to take my iPhone. I'm going to take my Android and film this guy sucking my dick and make $10,000. It's so crazy.
I mean, I think the majority of people who were on there would kind of be looking at my OnlyFans to giggle rather than be aroused. And, you know, it might well be very funny and that would be worth the money. And I am in comedy, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, if I were interested in porn, that probably would have come in my 20s, 30s, and those are long gone. So now, you know, I don't fully understand Patreon, but I do.
Patreon is important. I mean, I guess you can show, you can put whatever you want on Patreon, but Patreon, as far as I know, it isn't like a sex thing at all. But I'm sure some people do sexy stuff on there.
Yes, I was hearing that a few queens would like first put their, you know, sexy photos, or, you know, they'll do a photo shoot and they'll put it on the Patreon first so the diehard fans can just get it before anyone else. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. You know, but and there's a few comedians who do political stuff sometimes and then, you know, personal stuff or comedy stuff sometimes. My issue is this, and it's probably with my generation, is that I liked the idea of me doing a show and people knowing exactly what they're getting. And I'm not saying that the audiences don't leave confused. I'm saying that they know that they're getting a show of at least an hour when they pay to come in this room. So I have done download shows since the pandemic where I do like a special that's an hour long or 40 minutes. And, you know, they know that. And I would feel odd. I mean, I don't mind making money, but this is also a generational thing because older people are a little shy about GoFundMe and that kind of stuff. Other people, you know, even people my age will say, I want to do a documentary on this rare drag scene in Mexico in the 40s. And it sounds so interesting that people with money or friends or supporters want to. I mean, artists have always had patrons long before there was Patreon. So it's just a different way of looking at it. But the old-fashioned way of looking at it is that, well, if you want to make a movie and you don't have the money, you can't make the movie.
You can't make the movie, yeah.
You know, or if you were any good, why aren't you? And if your other film projects were good, why can you now not attract the money for this? Now, one thing would be that you've done other film stuff; it had been great, but it had been low budget or whatever. And then, you know, this is a special topic that warrants funding because people want to see the finished product. But I don't know. It's just, there's no guarantee that you will do the finished product. It's a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not an OnlyFans. I don't think I'm an OnlyFans person either. And I don't see myself doing anything like that. And I do have weird feelings about GoFundMes and stuff like that sometimes. Like, there was a queen a while back, and it was like, not a while back, I want to say like 3 or 4 years ago. Her name was Ali Gonza. And she worked at Vodka Soda Bottoms Up, who was owned by that racist ass motherfucker, Richie Torres, whatever his name is, the fucking dickhole. Anyway, that's not the point of the thing. But she Richie Friendly. She worked there, and then she started a GoFundMe, and the GoFundMe was like, I want to get my teeth done, and then it was like her GoFundMe was like $10,000 or $20,000, and I mean, I get like you don't have the money, so you're asking the community to help you out, but it got a lot of negative feedback. They were like, girl, we all want to get our teeth done, or something like that. But it was a really interesting GoFundMe situation. I seen everyone really resenting the person for like having the audacity to start. It was very interesting.
Yes, well, there's some that I've given to and some that I've shared. Same. And people, you know, mocked the very idea that they were getting this because they knew something about the person, like they were druggy. Mm-hmm. There was a performer who I won't mention who has done a bunch. And, you know, after she had gotten, you know, quite a lot of money on GoFundMe, a wealthy benefactor stepped in and paid for the whole thing, and she let everyone know. So they kind of looked at her other subsequent GoFundMes as, is this one, you know, are this really going to be, you know, she got more money than me. Why would I help her out? But, you know, I remember.
And now we know how Bianca Del Rio started her career.
I do remember Candace Cain had a benefit for her nose job, and this was before GoFundMe. But of course, you know, we went and did it because we loved her, and she didn't have the money, and you know, she also didn't have a history of doing these things again.
Yeah. But well, kind of along the lines of fostering community, and which is kind of what we're talking about with Candace Cain's GoFundMe and et cetera. I think that ties into one or maybe both of our headlines. So shall we get into them, Miss Lady Buntree?
Yes.
Headliners. This week, we are just, these are two big things. Well, one is trending like globally across left, right, black, brown, white, Lil Nas X and his controversial new video. And this is more so I feel more queer stuff. Utica, who is a contestant on the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, there was just a roast and she is being accused of fat shaming. So we are intrigued on your thoughts about both of these two things. How do you feel about it? Are you in agreement that Utica is fat shaming, or are you like, no, bitch, it's a fucking roast. You can make fat jokes. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Monet, you dumb bitch, and you know, whatever. And how do you feel about the Lil Nas X video?
Monet, I was very, very offended by the whale noises that Utica made. I mean, as a whale, they weren't recognizable to me. That was very offensive that she would appropriate my whale fatty culture and not even do it right. So I reject her apology, and I put her next to Sherry Pike. No, I'm kidding.
girl, she who shall not be named, Sherry Pye, the Voldemort of drag. Anyway, so we're asking questions about Lil Nas X. How do you feel about Lil Nas X's new video, Call Me By Your Name? The video, it has upset a lot of people because it, to quote the right, and a lot of lefty black people who are religious, that it is demonic, it is satanic, and it is repugnant, and it is a stain on music and black people and yada 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 yada.
But wait, Mama, none of those factors hurt your career. Demonic, a stain on black people, gay people. I mean, you did okay with it. So
yeah, I won fucking Drag Race with it, bitch.
Now, well, you have won.
Let's take this call.
My opinion on the whole fat shaming thing is like, it wouldn't be fat shaming if the jokes were actually funny, but they weren't funny, so it's like, what's the point?
This is where Monet and I disagreed a little bit, because if you tell a fat joke and you're against fat jokes and you need to apologize for fat jokes, and I'm saying if, I don't believe that, I say tell all kinds of jokes. If you believe that fat jokes are wrong, it doesn't matter if they're funny or not. And I did read the apology by Utica, and she apologizes for tasteless jokes. And she doesn't apologize for bad jokes, because if you were only apologizing for bad jokes, then Simone would also have to apologize because she bombed as well.
Yeah, but I agree more with this caller. I feel like, again, to his point, and kind of what Bunny and I disagreed on this week, is that had Utica's jokes, fat jokes, been funny, no one would have cared. Because, for example, a lot of people made fat jokes. A lot of people made comments about about Nina Shoulders and how big she is compared to the other girls.
Yes, Candy made a joke about how if Drag Race was the Olympics of drag, then Nina West was the stadium, which is a reference to her size.
Yeah. So I feel like had Utica Jones been funny, people would have been laughing with her. No one would have been saying it was fat shaming. But regardless of all of that, because I do agree with this caller, the jokes were not fat shaming. I don't think there was any fat shaming involved. It is a roast. When you do a roast, you are signing up for these jokes. Like, that's what roasts are. I think a lot of the young kids watching the show, they don't get that. Like, for example, in New York City, there was a big thing called the Friars Club. And the Friars Club was a big roast for lots of big celebrities. Famously, Whoopi Goldberg was dating, who was it, Ted Danson? Do you remember who it was?
Yes, and he did that. Yeah.
He did blackface. But again, like, and it was a roast.
She wrote the lines. She wrote his jokes.
Yeah, Whoopi wrote the jokes. So I think that, like, when you are going to a roast, now, today, now, I don't think I would be here for someone doing blackface at a roast today. But that's just my particular taste and how I feel about stuff. But roasts are just really incendiary, and they get really down and dirty. And if you are signing up to do a roast, you're signing up to hear those type of things. So I do not think that it was fat shaming under any circumstances.
But you see, this is where you need to understand what the PC culture is like. The PC culture says you cannot make any fat jokes, good or bad. So, I mean, yeah, the PC culture says fat jokes are off the limit. It's body shaming. And, you know, even Nina West chimed in and said, babe, it is a roast and we're all in on it and fully aware it was a roast. Give yourself a little grace. Lonnie Love tweeted, you are fabulous, Utica. It's a roast, so no offense taken. I really enjoy watching you this season. But this is something I thought was very interesting that Elite Daily wrote. If anything, the backlash Utica received is most telling of Drag Race's rapidly growing fan base. Pretty much every roast challenge and reading challenge in past seasons has included a few jokes about size, many of them which were received well by the queens being targeted. As Drag Race continues to cultivate a wide mainstream audience, contestants will have to challenge themselves to be more clever with their humor rather than throwing around fat jokes, even though I think fat jokes can be clever. But at the same time, Elite Daily goes on, fans new to drag culture should understand the history of roasts, and they don't, and reading within the community, they don't, before piling hate on someone. In the end, it's all part of the growing pains of bringing a subversive underground art form into the mainstream. And I'm part of the subversive part.
No,
that
bitch, you're
evolve.
Part of the, you're part of the underground. the underground that no one knows or cares about. And just to add on that, Michelle Visage also told Utica not to apologize at all, that it was just not funny and it was fine. So again, I agree with that. I don't think that Utica should have apologized, and I don't think she needed to. I really don't think she needed to. But if you do, we're curious to hear your takes on it. I think we should take another call, Lady Buntree, because we are backing up, honey. The kids have things to say. Let's go with this one.
I feel like when she first said them in the practice, they were kind of iffy. And when they flat out told her, you shouldn't say these are rude. And then she did them anyway, then it crosses the line. Because you were told it would be taken the wrong way, and you still decided to go up there and do it anyway.
Well, I can kind of see a point there. And again, but also, you have to realize these people are making a reality show. So they're building a show to show that she was like got advice not to do it, she did it anyway, as to why she may be justified in her going home. So you have to look at it in the context of a reality show. And now, sometimes, for example, season 8 with Bob is a perfect example. When they were up there rehearsing for that little Street Meets performance, when they had like that B-52's performance, Lucian Piani was literally telling them to not do what they did, and they ended up being safe and doing well in the challenge. So when the judges give you critiques, sometimes it is your choice whether to take their advice or not. Maybe there could have been a reality where Utica did not listen to their advice and she worked on the jokes at home and made them funnier. You know what I mean? But you know, it's all how you perceive it.
You know, I'm interested in something the caller said. My thing is that they had begun this segment, and I only watch the free segments that they put on Instagram. And I only watch those when we have to talk about one of the questions, one of the segments on Ebony and Irony. But so they had already, you know, I mean, I guess they had already to package this up in a neat, you know, episode where, I mean, to neatly package this in an episode where Utica goes home. They'd started it by making Utica look fake. Maybe she is fake because they had gotten rid of Tina Burner, and Utica was the lip syncer who got rid of her. And when they went back to the workroom after the lip sync, Utica was going on about how she felt bad about Tina. And then they cut it in with an interview segment of Utica by herself, which said, oh, well, maybe I'm a lip sync assassin. You know, look out for, and it was kind of like gleeful that Tina Burner. So if you put those two clips in the workroom and in the solo interview together, it makes Utica look like she is absolutely fake, phony, and a backstepper. Now, I've never met her, so I don't know if she is that. I know that the show encourages that kind of behavior, but I don't actually know if that's what it is. But in a world of manipulated reality TV, I will say this. All the press for the Rue Girls on the current season is carefully, you know, crafted. And, you know, I think that, you know, there were so many articles written about the apology that, you know, it was like, well, if World of Wonder was really concerned about these horrible, they were called, crude, they were called, jokes from Utica, well, then they didn't have to air them, or they could have aired just one of them. And another thing, even though Utica's set did bomb, when she told RuPaul to stand up, that was fucking hilarious. And funny enough, none of the articles mentioned that joke. So sometimes we wonder how what channels the press goes through, because obviously that joke refers to a, you know, not very well kept secret that when Rue is sitting behind the dead desk on the judging panel, you know, she's not got her heels on and may be in sweatpants, not tucked, not padded.
But why would she though, bitch? I mean,
I'm just saying that's not what she wants people to know, and that's why she flipped a bird, you know, at Utica when she said that. So it's like, if you know, you know, kind of a joke.
Yeah, but also,
it was a good joke. It was her only good joke.
Yeah, it was funny. And to be honest, Utica said, "While like." It was, to me, it was funny and not funny. It was so, the jokes were not funny, but I find humor and it makes me laugh when someone is bombing, because to me, it gets funny again to me, because like, it's like watching this person squander, that shit gets hilarious. And then also seeing how uncomfortable people were, that shit makes me laugh too. So I kind of like straddle the fence on the humor of Utica's set, because I'm like, it was, her jokes are not funny, but watching her bomb was funny to me.
Well, that one was funny, and if you like seeing people bomb, you must see Pandora Box.
Let's take another call.
I love that of all people, Utica has one of these controversies, because she tries so hard not to offend anyone. So while I'm not offended, I'm living for this.
Yeah, that is a great point. Utica has spent a lot of the season trying not to be involved in controversy with the Bob Ross thing. And, so yeah, it's funny that she is like the center of this like big thing now. That is very ironic.
I mean, I'm just guessing, cause I don't know her, but you know, what if she is fake and that all that fussing was, or what if she's sensitive about some things and not others? I have no idea.
Let's take another call.
I'm honestly not sure why a lot of the straight people are hating on Lil Nas X and stating that, you know, he makes music for kids. I don't think it's fair to say that he is a children's artist just because of one song he made a whole bunch of kids liked. I feel like he should be able to do what he wants. And that video was fucking iconic. That part where he goes up the pole and comes down with them fucking braids. Iconic.
Yeah, well, I agree. Just because a lot of kids like your music does not make you a fucking make you a child's music artist. I was like, yes, kids are gonna sneak and listen to whatever they want, but it's still up to parents to help. To if you don't want your kid watching something, then that's your job. That is not Lil Nas X is not gonna stop making music or not making the music that he wants because he wants to be an idol for your kids or what. Like fuck out of here. Like, no, that's not my job. That's your job as a parent, not mine. I'll do whatever the fuck I want.
Well, I like that he is having fun with this on Twitter, and he retweeted someone who had tweeted, obviously retweeted a tweet, so who said, "How dare you, a full-grown adult, express your sexuality in your music? My 5-year-old child with unlimited internet access that I never monitor might see this." So, I thought that was funny. But, you know, he also tweeted something about he's going to have to get Kirk Franklin to do a guest rap.
Oh, my God. I love him. Watching his tweets, you can tell that he's like this really feisty 21-year-old kid. I forget how young he is. In my mind, he's like 26, 27, but he's a 21-year-old. He's a baby.
Yeah. I mean, to speak to, it's not his job to, you know, worry about other people's children. If he wants to express himself in this way and he wants to start a conversation about influences of the church, maybe particularly in the Black community, that made him hate himself as 14-year-old Montero when he swore that he would never come out. I do see that. And listen, I'm not responsible for everything I say at 58. So he's not responsible for the repercussions.
I think you left away a zero there.
Oh, okay. I'm forgetful at my old age. But he's not responsible to know all the repercussions of everything, every effect that it has. But the fact is, he is an artist popular with children with a kind of a hokey country rap hit that was beloved by children. And while he can do anything that he wants and express himself in his music, the pain that came from that, if I will never have children, I only look pregnant, but if I had children, I may not want them to see at 10, 12, you know, or younger, their favorite pop star humping the devil, you know, talking about cocaine, talking about shooting children in someone's mouth. Now, if he's grown up like a lot of these artists do that were, you know, Disney, you know, Miley Cyrus, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, there's always this like point where at first they're a bit more innocent and then the record label, you know, gets them to be more and more outrageous. And you know, it doesn't always feel authentic to me because I'm cynical and I always look, you know, at who is benefiting and what might be going on. So I can understand how he wants to start a conversation about something that hurt him a lot. And it hurts many gay kids, especially in the Black community. Monet said that really liberated her and resonated with her. But I can also see parents who were really, really turned off by it. You know, the church is something that people don't think about. They just subscribe to it. You know, they go to a church every week. Their parents did, their grandparents did. They give the tithe or the offering to the church. They take the communion. And if you dare to speak out against the church, they're not going to think about, oh, well, he's using this imagery. They're going to lash out at who is doing that. So while you know.
But they do that anyway. These religious, they do that anyway. But also, Bunny, there is 3-6 Mafia. They have all of these artists or rap artists and pop artists who use satanic and devil imagery all the time. Why are you taking this moment to lash out at this Black queer kid? Because you don't care about the messaging. You care about his sexuality. That's what you care about. They don't care about any of that. They care about that he's gay.
Well, also, I had never heard of those other artists, and I did not know that they... So he is a higher profile than them.
No, 3-6 Mafia was huge.
Okay, well, I'm white. Sorry. I mean, if he's going to come out, you know, apologetically, but you know, like, you know what? When I saw Satan shoes on trending, like a shoe with blood in it, a drop of blood, and selling 666 pairs, you got to admit that may not start the right conversation. I remember being on tour with Sharon Needles, and we went to Virginia.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. Speaking of the devil. And,
hello.
And she had one thing where she ripped the pages out of a Bible. First, she entered in a coffin, and then
yes,
she ripped the pages out
that.
Of the Bible.
I remember seeing videos of her. Sharon used to enter. She used to make every gig have a coffin on hand so she can get in the coffin and be in the coffin and enter. Girl, that girl is so crazy. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, this wasn't in West Virginia, but it was in Virginia, which is, you know, churchy. And she pulled all the pages out of a Bible, put it in a blender, and then drank it. And you know what? I could see people, and I heard other people, especially black people who had seen this particular act before in other cities, that just doesn't sit well with them. So I'm wondering if this conversation that Nas started is going to be a conversation ender with some people. Honey, I'm an atheist. You know, I know that the church has hurt gay people. You know, I'm not sensitive about the church. I'm just saying, is it the best way to start a conversation?
Yeah, let's take this next call.
First of all, the only time black people really get religious is when it's time to be homophobic. We literally praise 3-6 Mafia.
Oh my God.
Bone Thugs and Harmony. And gave one of the motherfuckers an Oscar and the other Grammys. So, fuck what they gotta say. Lil Nas X is doing art. He's doing his thing. Fuck that. They just mad because he gay.
Hello, Vinny. Abso-fucking-lily. Also, your avatar is very cute. I don't know if you live in New York, but, like, what's good? Like, maybe we can go for, like, a walk, like, around Central Park, like, or, like, in the Bronx or something. But you look very cute, Vinny. Hi.
Excuse me, I believe he was calling for me. Now,
but yes, 1,000% yes to all of the things Vinny said. I couldn't agree more. Literally, yes, perfect.
I want to read a tweet that Lil Nas retweeted. I'm going to get my Mark of the Beast vaccine passport. Then I'm going to buy some of Lil Nas's Satan shoes and eat devil's food cake. Then have some deviled egg. Then post some wicked looking snakes. Did I leave anything out? I thought that was cute. But here's
a
Christian. Here's a Christian take. Let's see. Oh, well, let's take a question because I'm going to be looking for this. I'm looking
okay,
for
let me
it.
Let's play this one.
I want to say that I'm here for it because it's like a big F you to all the things that they said about us, what's going to happen to us when we're gay, but I'm not going to act like I didn't throw some holy water at my phone because, you know, in the black community, you know, we don't play them games, but I'm here for it. I support it.
And so when you say you threw some holy water on your phone, does that mean that you were wincing a little bit? Like that you
yeah.
were, you know, like you think it's a good conversation, but it's a lot?
Yeah, and I identify with this caller. Thank you, Patrick. I identify with that. I feel like I watched a video and I was like, oh, bitch, you better work. But at the same time, in the back of my mind, because, you know, all habits die hard. And I did grow up in the church and I was part of a traveling church choir that we, you know, because of that choir, I was able to travel and see the world and perhaps have bigger dreams and aspirations because of that church choir. But, you know, it's hard to, when you grow up in that doctrine, it's hard to break free from that. And even though I am so liberated from organized religion and all that stuff, watching the video, I still feel myself being like, ooh, girl, this is a bit much. But I'm still in the same time. I'm like, bitch, you better work.
Wait, so you identify with this caller and you wanted to fuck the last caller? What's going on
yes.
here, darling? Is this a chat show or a Grindr? My God, you are a whore. Oh my God. So here is what someone else tweeted. I didn't catch the name, but it seems like an older black guy. My son watched the video and turned to me and asked, "Dad, does Lil Nas X suck so bad he has to use Satan for sales?" I couldn't lie to my little man and told him the truth. "Yes, he does, son. It was the real one of the realest moments of my life." Now, listen, Twitter is full of bots and trolls and obviously the right wing and the Christian, you know, people, I mean, are out to get him. So this could not even be a black guy who doesn't even have a son. But, I mean, as the last caller indicated, you know, someone else said God will have the last word when it comes to Lil Nas. It just hits people in a place. And so, listen, if it hits people in a place that makes them have an uncomfortable conversation, I'm all here for it. I just hope that the conversation, maybe Lil Nas wants his audience to grow up with him. And he also dropped some lyrics in another song that hinted that he was a bottom, which I have not ever heard any artist say. I come from the day where you didn't even come out as gay. You came out as bisexual because you didn't want the stigma of even being gay. So mm-hmm, I've never heard anyone say that, talk about their I'm gay and here's, you know, my sexual position.
Yeah, I mean, what you hear, you know, the WAP. Wet ass pussy. You hear Lil Kim talking about all the things she wants to do on a dick and what she will do with a dick today, tonight, tomorrow, next year, next month, next week. So it is, this is kind of something we haven't heard in mainstream pop, is a guy being like, I'm going to ride his fucking dick and stroke my dick till I nut into it, right into his mouth. Like, we have not heard this. It is uncharted waters. So I'm like, bitch, you better fucking work.
Well, I mean, you know, I love nasty stuff, and my own act is nasty, but I'm not really performing it on his
no,
level.
No, it's not bunny. It's not marketing. Nasty. It's not nasty. It's disgusting.
Oh, okay. I mean, do you know Candace Owens, the Republican firebrand who jumps into every controversy? I mean,
of course.
She, Lil Nas, got into it. And she tweeted, this is rough. "We've turned George Floyd, a criminal drug addict, into an icon. We are promoting Satan shoes to wear on our feet. We've got Cardi B named as Woman of the Year, but we're convinced it's white supremacy that's keeping Black America behind." Then he clapped back at her and she said, "You successfully got used by corporations to help further destroy our youth. Congratulations on being a pawn in a game you likely don't even understand." Now, I'm going to tell the truth. When I saw this, I said exactly what I said earlier. I'm glad if he can lash out at the church if it's made him feel horrible and like he can never come out and he made a pact to himself at 14. But whenever I see a launch this big, complete with blood drops in the 666 pairs of shoes by a company that just put out sneakers with holy water, I just can't wonder if nothing, and I agree with Candace's, the first part of her tweet, but I wonder if Lil Nas, 21-year-old, and his desire to grapple with this was not milked by his record company, his PR company, a shoe company that had used religious imagery before. I mean, Madonna had used religious imagery in a way that I felt was very, very empty. You know, like it was like the Like a Prayer video, and it was like, oh, she gets molested or something, and then a black Jesus goes to jail. And I was like, what are you really trying to say here? It's like you're just trying to like cash in on some, you know, controversy that will split everyone between religious and non-religious, left and right, you know, more open-minded gays and more traditional, you know, religious gays who might, you know, be bugged by this. I don't know. What do you think, Monet?
I mean, I think what Candace Owens is trying to get, the basis of what she's trying to say, obviously with all the racial, without all the racial shit, is about capitalism. And was his record label, his management company, Nike, were they all behind this because they saw it as a way to make dollars? Abso-fucking-lutely. But I mean, that is, we live in a capitalistic as fuck society. I think this is putting money in his pocket. And yes, it is divisive, but politics makes everything divisive. They make everything becomes this huge political statement, whether we want to or not. Like they literally, they take some of the most mundane things that artists do and make it a political thing, left versus right. They do it for everything. So I don't see anything. I mean, at that same token, then I shouldn't sell merch. I shouldn't sell my keychains. I shouldn't sell memorabilia from Drag Race. The booklet that I used to write to make my notes for Maya Angelou. Like I shouldn't sell those things because
I don't think you should. I didn't enjoy any of them. I don't think you should sell anything. Like that again. I mean, it was that they were flops. I mean, why bother, really? You know, I mean, listen, I of course I sell t-shirts and, you know, tickets to shows as well, but there is a little bit of difference when you're using a, like, a slap in the face to someone's, you know, to many people's religion, and you're tying it to gay stuff in such an inflammatory way. So that's not just selling records or tickets. It's like a really, I mean, listen, I don't know what went on in those meetings with the marketing team. So it's all conjecture. But I just wonder if they did not seize upon this as a way to make hay and divide people. And as I said on Ebony and Irony, I don't hear anybody talking about the song. I hear them talking about their religion, the shoes, the video, but not the song.
This is true.
When I heard the song, I thought, you know, I didn't really like Old Town Road. I was like, oh, rap and country. I can't really imagine the rap fans that are going to like the country part, and I can't really imagine the country fans that are going to like the rap part. But hey, I'm old. What do I know? So, you know, it's about current taste. And I just thought, wow, it's not really, to me, like the most exciting song. So I just thought, is that the kind of song where you lay on this intense marketing controversial push?
Yeah, I feel that. Let's take, we have like a bunch of calls coming. Let's take another call here.
Okay, listening to this conversation, I'm just gonna insert the little Bob that is in my head, the little Bobism. You can do or say whatever you want to do. Just be ready for the repercussions.
Well, that guy, I don't know if it's talking about Utica or Lil Nas, but it works for both. You can make a music video about whatever you want. You just have to be ready for the repercussion. I think that, honestly, by his Twitter clapbacks and retweets, I think Lil Nas has thought about this, and his team probably prepared him, like, this is probably going to get crazy, because he seems, in my mind, he's saying all the right things, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, as I agree with that caller, and as much as I hate to say it because I don't want any Bob in this podcast, well said, Bobism. You know, may I weigh in on behalf of the older white drag community and share something written on Facebook by Coco Peru, an older drag queen? If anything, Nas has shined a light on all the hypocrisy, and from that perspective, he's doing God's work. It reminds me of my monologue of finally going to hell after having the time of my life. And, you know, someone else commented, being raised a Pentecostal Christian, I was one of those scared of going to hell for being who I am. After hearing you talk about it like that, gave me a whole new perspective on what we believed. Funny how we go through life torturing ourselves with a lot of the BS we've been fed since kids. And you know what? That's great. That's the desired effect that I hope that Nas wanted, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I was gonna say, as we only have a few more minutes, so let's take another call. This is from Alex Soto. For some reason, that name sounds so familiar.
I know him.
I know right? him. He sounds familiar.
Hello, Alex, big fan. I think the current PC climate is going to destroy comedy. And I grew up with, like, Sarah Silverman, Lisa Lampanelli, like, all about how you frame a joke and leading up to the punch and saying something you don't expect. And that's what made it funny and irreverent comedy. And the Comedy Central roast, that's what everybody was there for. They were there to get made fun of, and there was nothing off limits. And I think that's what made it great. And I think it's the youth culture now that is being sensitive to everything and acting like a victim, or wanting to be a victim, for that matter.
Well, I agree with you, honey, but I'm one of those that tells, I'm one of the ones that tells all the inappropriate jokes. So, I mean, as I said,
yeah, whether they're funny or not, and most of the times they're not.
I mean, so now often a comedian will open their set, and if they are visibly different from the rest of the audience, or they have some, you know, characteristic about themselves, like if it's a person of color in front of a mainly white audience, if it's someone who is fatter than everyone else, like me.
Yeah.
I'm not fatter than everyone. I will make a fat joke.
Just most people.
Yeah. I will make a fat joke just to get the audience on my side so that they know that, hey, I know it. I'm there to have a good time. I want to fuck around and read myself, read everybody else. But nowadays, if I tell a joke like, shit, I'm going to have to remember it again. I went to the doctor, and he said, your cholesterol is so high. I said, what should I do? He said, don't eat anything fatty. I said, oh, you mean like burgers or bacon? He said, no, I mean, don't eat anything fatty. And the crowd, I mean, I've told that joke for years, but the crowds will now sometimes gasp at me making a fat joke about myself.
I don't think that's why they're gasping, honey.
Oh, you think it's my breath? It wasn't an intimate venue.
It may be the halitosis.
But yeah, I mean, a roast is supposed to be evil humor. And, you know, it's like, you know, not everyone is going to have got mixed clothes. Not everyone is going to be good at a roast, because roast humor is especially mean. It's, you know, insult comedy. It's not like, you know, and Utica is naturally funny, you know, with her, you know, goofy, you know, thing.
Wiggle,
but,
to the top.
You know,
wiggle to the top. Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that was, but yes, okay. If that's her way of being funny, the show, you know, pushes the queen's boundaries and gets them to do things impersonating so and so that they would never really do in their real act, and that they feel, you know, uncomfortable with. But maybe it evens all out with the different challenges, with some excelling in wardrobe, some excelling in themes, some excelling in, you know, roasts, and some excelling in singing, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's you mentioned when we were discussing this on the podcast that she was supposed to make, Utica was supposed to make a joke about someone else, and it bombed, and she just said,
"Oh no!" You're fat. And during the Snatch Game, she was bombing really hard during Snatch Game, and she made a joke about some Bob Ross shit that was didn't land. It was very flat, and then she just goes, "Hey, well, pork chop is fat." And it was like, there wasn't even a joke. She was just like making this observation about this poor fat bitch that got eliminated first. Like, pork chop is like, oh my god.
Well, at the same time, her name is Pork Chop. I mean.
I heard it was your first choice, but it was taken, so you had to go with the Lady Bunny.
I'm a friend of Pork Chop's drag mother, the late, great Carmela Marcela Garcia, who was very, very plus size. And both of them love to make fun of themselves. If you ask Carmela, what's up, she'd say, my cholesterol.
Girl, is my name Carmela? Because I have this name.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
wow, so you're making fun of black people with high cholesterol. This is getting, this podcast is taking a really dark turn.
Only if they're Satan worshipers.
Lady Buntree.
Yes, ma'am.
I think if they do Bridgerton season 2, you should audition as Lady Buntree.
Okay, yeah.
Lady, well, I think Lady Buntree and the Gaping Hole.
Yeah, and I think you should audition for the troll under the Bridgerton.
I mean, if they had big dicks on that under that Bridgerton, I'll gladly be the fucking troll, bitch.
Okay, little Nas, you were a great guest.
No, call me Big Nas, mama. I'm Big Nas.
Yes.
No, apologizing for fat jokes.
You have offended me with a fat joke because I struggle to lose weight and to know that there are monsters out there who only see me as a fat pig and not as a wonderful person.
No, Bunny, we don't only see you as a fat pig. We see you as a fat bitch, too. Okay.
Pig in a Wig Productions.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into this episode. And yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed it. Please, please, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Make sure you subscribe there and leave reviews there. I know we say do it everywhere else, but Apple Podcasts is especially important because the more you guys like and subscribe it and leave reviews, the higher we trend on their podcasts.
Yes. And at my advanced age, being trendy is essential to my well-being. That's yes. What my therapist on BetterHelp said.
Thank you, Bunny. And I can't wait to chat with you again. My week is just going to be filled with glee waiting to talk to you again.
Yeah, I'm sure.